Hello, everybody, and welcome to Weekly Manga Recap, February 18th, 2015. I'm our ruler of time, and here is my co-host, Rolo T. What's up, man?
How's it going, Nick?
Pretty well, yeah.
Pretty well?
Yeah. How about you?
I'm good, Nick. I'm trying to culture myself a bit more.
Culture?
Yeah, I just started reading The Brothers Karamazov. I can't pronounce the fucking name, but it's by Dostoevsky. Very good book thus far. I'm just starting to kind of get into it. I'm going to work my way through that. Thinking about trying out some Stephen King after that. Maybe some John Steinbeck. Kind of filling in the gaps of my reading knowledge that I've kind of neglected over the years. And a big fueling for this is because I've started playing Trivia Crack, which is essentially like Pictionary for your phone. Or not Pictionary.
Trivial Pursuit.
Trivial Pursuit for your phone. And it is made me very evident that my art knowledge is severely lacking.
Okay, so you're like, I have to be able to win Trivial Pursuit in the future, so...
Yes, so I need to kind of brush up on some things. It's very important to do so, because my family is big into it, and we are now putting high stakes on these games. We just recently have started up a game, or rather we just finished a game, where the loser had to then watch Rosie O'Donnell's newest stand-up special.
Oh, God.
And I won... Just barely got through it. And the next one that we are planning to do is the loser has to watch the god-awful looking WWE crosses over with Flintstones animated special.
That looks amazingly terrible.
So I need to brush up immediately so that I can destroy my brother and not have to watch that.
I remember The Chaperone came out, and you had, like, the, what, eating contest with him? It was some sort of, like...
We had a sausage biscuit, a McDonald's sausage biscuit and hash brown combo. Like, you had to eat one of them to count as a point. Whoever could get the most points would win. So that was the eat-off, and the loser had to watch Triple H's, like, direct-to-DVD movie, The Chaperone.
Yeah. Well, no, I don't think it was actually direct-to-DVD. I think it got, like, released in one theater, just so they could say it was released in theaters. And then it immediately went to Walmart after that.
Yeah, it was pretty... That was obviously when I was a lot larger.
Yeah.
And I think I got through six of those. Six, like, sausage biscuit hash brown combos, and I managed to beat him on that, and he had to watch it. So now... I need to keep this streak up and not have to watch these god awful things. So I need to brush up on my trivia.
All right. If you do happen to lose, then you know, call me up and we'll watch a terrible movie together or something.
Oh God, Nick, you didn't even lose a game of Trivial Crack. Why a Trivial Crack? Why are you doing this to yourself?
Well, you understand that I'm becoming a sucker to, you know, just like consuming WWE shit anyway. So might as well. I think I'm overdue at this point because I managed to skip the Hornswoggle Leprechaun movie.
Oh, and I'm trying to, you know, because it's a phone game, you know, so obviously there's microtransactions they try to put in it. Like, there's basically lifelines in the game that you can use with coins. And you earn coins by winning. But obviously, it's really hard to fucking win when you don't have any lifelines.
Right.
So, there's other ways you can get, like, achievements that'll get you coins. And one of them is to submit questions. And I'm trying to submit some. I'm trying to submit good questions, and these fuckers keep turning them down. It is annoying. I've put a
question... What is the...
Liam, goddamn, I'm talking about Trivia Crack! Oh, what a bad cat. I have a trivia question here. I was, what is, Alexander Graham Bell, when he invented the telephone, what phrase did he intend to be the greeting used when answering the phone?
Hello.
No. That is one of the choices I put on there. I put hello, salutation, namaste, and ahoy. And the correct answer is ahoy. He wanted everyone to answer the phone with ahoy, which is why in Simpsons, Mr. Burns answers the phone with ahoy hoy, because it's supposed to be a joke about how old he is, that he's still doing that. And I was like, what a good question. This is, you know, it's fun. People may not get it at first. It's something that, like, when you hear the answer, you're like, oh, that's cool. I'm glad I know about that now. It's getting downvoted.
Like,
no, you have to have an 85% approval rating for your question to get in there, and I already have like 12 downvotes. So it's just not happening. I'm just like, you fuckers. Meanwhile, stupid ass questions like, what's Taylor Swift's song about shaking it about? I call it. It's like, you fucking ass. How does this get approved?
So it's community driven.
Yes.
Questions.
Yes, all of it's community driven.
Right there.
Yeah. Hold on a sec. I gotta beat her cat up. Nick, bam for me.
All right, Animal Abuse, live on Weekly Manga Recap. only show that discusses manga and also beats up the cats that we in fact love. Still stalling. I'm going to talk about how much my cats kind of bother me. So, a few nights ago, one of my cats wanted to be let into the garage. I was like, you stupid cat, you can't go into the garage. You get lost if the garage opens up and we can't find you. And even if he can't find you, who knows what place you'll get into. But he just would not leave us alone. He kept on pawing at the door and yowling and yowling. And it was 4 a.m.!
Hey, we all don't like cats, Nick.
No, that's why...
Shut up! You're in the room! Why are you still bitching?
Now I want to leave. Also feed me, also let me outside, and then let me back in.
Pet me for approximately 2 seconds. That was too hard. I hate you. I'm going to bite your hand. I hate this cat, Nick. I hate the shit out of this cat.
Okay.
Stop rubbing your head against me. I know you trust me. I don't like you, though.
Oh, God. I just, speaking of, you mentioned Mr. Burns, and that got me thinking of this Simpsons thing that I only just discovered. Because there's a lot of classic Simpsons stuff that I haven't seen.
Mm-hmm.
It was the episode where Bart gets an elephant.
Oh, you never seen Stampy?
No. And so I just, one of the clips I saw was, at the end of the episode where they've taken him to the reserve, and the guy has to explain why Stampy is still being, violent and needy and stuff like that. And he says, sometimes, animals are just unhappy because of the situation they're in. That's why they lash out. But, some animals, like people, are just jerks. And he goes behind him and Homer's, butting him in the ribs.
Stop that. Oh, man. Oh, God. There's so many great classic Simpsons episodes. I probably shouldn't be going off topic since we have such a long episode this week. But I just want
to... Even without recommendation, we've got, eight series we've got to cover.
But I saw... It was just amusing that came to mind recently. I saw an episode because FXX does all these marathons. And they had an episode recently where, Lisa wants to go to the museum. And she's like, Dad, can I take the bus? Why the bus? Can't your mom take you? She's taking Bart to the hospital. The bus, eh? Just completely blowing over the fact that he doesn't know why Bart's going to the hospital. Oh, man. All right, sorry. That just came to mind. We should get to talking about manga.
Right. As it so happens, we go through the manga alphabetically. It so happens the first manga in that order is our new manga, which is Black Clover, one of our Jumpstart series. This is, it's called Page One instead of Chapter One, which is actually very confusing if you have a series where, you have to flip through pages anyway. For those of you manga artists out there who are considering a goofy means of calling your chapters, don't use page. Or book. Just say chapter.
I think everyone should be Ice Shield 21 and call your chapters downs.
That's great.
Which is weird when you get to 356 down. I don't know if it went that far, but still.
Yeah, it did.
Good. Good.
Or something 336 maybe, I don't know. It was close enough. Anyway, so this is a series about wizards. We open up with this legend, basically, about the nine-tailed fox. Sorry, a demon. So it says, humanity came close to being decimated by the demons, but just one mage saved humankind, and he was since known as the Hokage, Wizard King, and became a legend.
It's definitely Wizard King, not the other thing you're thinking of.
Right. So we cut back to the present, where the Wizard King is being greeted by this town full of people, and everyone's cheering for him. Yay, Wizard King! Yay! And, these people are talking about how, the kingdom exists thanks to the generations of Wizard Kings who protect us, but then we cut into this weird, skull-shaped town building thing. Is that just a skeleton? Or is that supposed to... Whatever.
I think that's supposed to be the demon that was vanquished at the start. And I guess... its skull just hangs about.
No one ever gets freaked out by that thing.
They're just like, wow, it is really... I wish they'd move that.
can we please invent construction equipment so we can get a wrecking ball in here? Ugh.
It's weird because there's a statue of the Wizard King on it. But I don't think he's dead because I don't think it's supposed to be that first page was supposed to be 20 years ago, they celebrated his return. It's like, oh no, he just, he's back, and we celebrate him, so we erected a statue of him on top of this skull, like this dead skull.
It might not be the same Wizard King. It could be a different Wizard King.
It's like the idea that they crafted the, like, it wasn't even like the, like, demon monster fell there and, like, dried up into a husk and skeleton bones. Like, they just crafted it. They were like, a part of this magnificent monument is this horrifying statue of a demon skull we're going to carve into your land. Like, oh, that's, I mean, I like the fucking Hokage as much as the next guy, but can we move this to somewhere less farmlandy?
Please. So, our main character, Asta, he is trying to ask out this nun, and not just asking her out, he's asking her to marry him, like presenting her about flowers, like, please marry me! And she says, I'm a nun. I can't know. And so he's like, oh no, I've been rejected, but then he just gets up and he's like, no, I'm not giving up, marry me, please! And this is his whole thing. You know, he never gives up, even in conversations, which is kind of, I don't know, I don't think this is a very good example to open up with. Fedora wearing hero over here. Ugh. So, she summons this magic to knock him down and get him to leave her alone. And then Yuno shows up. Yuno is his friend, his tall, handsome, dark-haired friend slash rival. And so, Naruto tells Sasuke, Asta tells Yuno.
Nick, it's not completely like Naruto, all right? It's also stealing heavily from Haikyuu as well, okay?
So, you know, says Asta, he's, you know, being a brat, he's being immature, and Asta's like, oh, I challenge you, and Yuno's like, no, because you can't use magic, so what's the point? And Asta's like, oh, you show you, watch me use magic, and he tries to cast out magic, and a little, like, nothing comes out of his hand. He's got. It's like you try to shoot a Hadouken, and it's like, what would actually happen if you tried to shoot a Hadouken actually happens instead. So Asta freaks out, he's like, oh, well, fine, well, watch me do all these awesome sit-ups super fast. Well, see, none of you can do this, and people around him are just like, so who cares? You look like a dumbass. And you know, it's showing off very simple magic to help people with chores and stuff when Asta can't do anything. And we get insight into their backstory about how they were orphaned and abandoned at this church on the same day, and they've always been together since then, growing up together. But Yuno is super talented and awesome and handsome, and Asta has no magical talent, and he's stupid and everyone hates him, basically. And then after they do this whole thing, they actually get a bit more, however, to show that Yuno does care about Asta because of, well, that gets further explained later on, so I'll hold off on that one. So, Asta tries to, like, train himself, and he's taking all this stuff that is rumored to increase your magical power. He's like, yeah, I'm definitely gonna do it. I'm gonna get really good. I'm gonna become the Wizard King, so on and so forth. I'll never give up on it. I'm gonna train my body in order to prepare for it. And then we go into this festival that they have, I guess. Once a year, in various places, all the 15-year-olds are gathered to hold an awarding ceremony for grimoires, and these grimoires increase their magical powers. So they come into this big building with these giant shelves of books and stuff, and so the guy, the master of the ceremony or whatever, is like, you know, we haven't had a Wizard King from this area, or something like that, and I wish that someone among you will become the Wizard King. And, yeah, here, time for the awarding of the grimoires, and all the books start floating out to people, and people receive their tomes, and so on and so forth. And immediately, these two guys start comparing dick sizes. It's like, look, mine is bigger! Yeah, but mine's thicker! Come on, guys.
We can all agree, thicker is more important. Penis is a lot like cake. The thicker the piece, the better it tastes in my mouth. Which is what my brother set my status to back on AOL Messenger when I was in high school.
Nice.
So I know this for a fact.
Oh, God. So, different people are saying, he's like, oh, now I can go to the city. Well, I am going to take over the family business. Well, we are going to join the Magic Knights and so on and so forth. And Asta is just like, my grimoire's not coming! And people are like, well, I guess you don't get one. Master is like, yeah, try again next year. He's like, ah! And people are like, ah, ha, ha, you didn't get a book at all. Ba-ba-deer-ba-deer-ba-deer. But then, I wish someone would have actually said that. But then suddenly, Yuno's book starts glowing and a four-leaf clover appears on it. And they're like, oh my god, it's from the legend. The first Wizard King also received one. It supposedly had great power. That grimoire has good fortune within it. And so Yuno says, then I'll become the Wizard King. And everyone's like, oh my god, he's going to be the next Wizard King. And Asta says, you know, I'm going to catch up to you because I am your rival. And everyone's like, who's doing this? He's got no magic town. He's going to be red.
I love the way these people talk in this universe. It's great. It would be magic.
Sorry, I've just seen this so often. It's like, you know, crowd criticizing the main character. Anonymous douchebags.
Yeah. I think the villain shows up. I didn't think I'd find anything great in this.
Yeah, so...
Eventually, everyone, when they finish talking, they just all fucking morph into that dude from fucking Police Academy and start making fucking onomatopoeias. Yeah, just like, I'm gonna take your power and become the... Papa Sprinkler.
So, Yuna says, well, there's no way you can do that. He just walks off. And some shady guy in the background is like, I didn't think something so great would appear in this backwater town. Nah, nah, nah. So Asta goes off to where he was training before, and he's all depressed because he's like, oh, I knew I had no skill in magic, but I didn't know it was so bad that I wouldn't get a grimoire. And he remembers a promise that they made to each other as kids, and they were going to compete to try and become Wizard King against each other. But even now, even though he doesn't have a grimoire, he's like, I'm still not going to give up. Then we cut to where Yuno is, outside of his home, I guess. And the shady guy from before sneak attacks him and summons all these magical chains to bind him up. And he says that this will prevent you from using magic, and it will also stop you from moving. And Yuno says, well, who are you? There's his name. Okay. Because he opens by saying, I was part of the Magic Knights. Is that a V or a U? Fuck you and your alternate font.
I think it's Rev-Chi.
I'm pretty sure it's Rev-Chi. So he's like, yeah, I'm just a original thief now. And only the chosen get to use this grimoire, but an underworld collector would pay insane money for a four-leaf clover grimoire. Okay. So he goes on and on talking about nothing for a bit, but Asta comes in, he's like, you better stop, you thief, you let my friend go, and so on and so forth, and so he's like, oh, you're the guy who didn't get grimoire. So, but Asta says, like, yeah, whatever, I'm not gonna run away, I'm going to stop this guy. Rev-Chi summons a whole bunch of chains to stop him, and Asta's like, I'm not done yet, even though he's been bound up. But Rev-Chi's like, no, you're still finished, dance of the pitless viper. It seems like it should be pitiless, not pitless. Pitless viper just means that it's homeless.
Or you could just say it's a viper that's not in a fucking hole. You know? It's like hanging about on the ground. It's like, what's so special about me?
That means that all, you know, snake-based attacks are, you know, pitless, unless you put your opponent in a pit first.
Well, maybe... Maybe this is a character that's going to have a long history in this series, no. And eventually he does throw characters into pits, and then it's Dance of the Pit Full Viper.
Yeah. No, no.
Having Viper.
Sorry, I don't think that Mizuki is going to stay around for long after he tries to attack Iruka. I mean, Rev-Chi's going to stick around for long after attacking Yuno. So, Rev-Chi says, also, my chains let me detect the magical powers of those they touch, because... I don't know.
It's a thing they do.
It's just a thing they do for some reason.
I need to establish you have no magical powers, so that's what they do.
No, you have absolutely no magical powers within you. You were probably just born that way. No wonder you can't use magic at all. And so Asta starts getting all depressed and like, I guess I really have no potential. I can never become the Wizard King. And Rev's like, yeah, you're a born loser. But Yuno says, hey, who are you calling a loser? Asta is... Flashback. It's gonna take him a long time to remember this, so
he'll just stop for him, and he's like, Asta is, like, it was a question, he's like, Asta is, he's like, right here. No, don't say it. I think that's a type of pudding?
Like, who wants to be a millionaire music starts playing in the background?
He's just like, oh god, I fucking hate entertainment questions on Trivia Crack. They're such a mixed bag.
I'm gonna ask the audience.
Audience did not give a fuck. Sorry, you lost your lifeline.
So, basically, way back when they were kids, Yuno had this medallion, and some douchebag tried to steal it. And Asa jumped in and attacked him, and you know, demanded they give it back. And he was like, oh, shove off, you dirty little orphan. But Asa would refuse to give up, kept on getting back up. And eventually the guy was just like, it's not fucking worth it to deal with your shit over and over again. Here, just have it. And he bailed. So since that day, you know, Asa, you know, he swore to become the Hokage Wizard King. And Yuno said, fine, then I'll become the Wizard King too. And then we'll... I guess he never completed that sentence.
He just stopped at some point.
This is just Yuno's bad habit. Just like, just trailing off in the middle of sentences. Hey, Yuno, what do you want for breakfast? I'll have a cheeseburger with...
It'd be great, dude. It's just like, cheeseburger isn't a breakfast food.
Oh, God. So, you know, just recalls, like, you know, Asta gave me the courage to move forward when I was too scared to even move. No matter how far ahead I went ahead, he stuck with me and came along because Asta never gave up. Asta is no loser. I never complete that.
He's just like, well, some.
Asta is my rival. And, yeah, Asta is like, I'm not done yet. And Retchie's like, how the hell is he still not giving up? And Asta says, sorry for showing you a pathetic side of me, you know. Hold on, I'll kick this guy's butt. And suddenly, a grimoire floats out of the building. And it's this black grimoire that comes out to Asta. And, you know, it's like, yeah, I knew there's no way that you wouldn't be chosen. And a freaking black sword appears out of the book. And the guy's like, what the fuck is that thing? Why does he have a sword? And then he looks at the book. And Riff realizes, clover leaves, you know, a three-leaf clover. Each of the leaves represents sincerity, hope, and love. And within the fourth leaf dwells good fortune. And in the fifth leaf resides the QB, the devil. And this image of this huge demonic creature appears as like a shadow over Asta as he picks up the sword. And so basically they say, you know, because Asta doesn't have magical powers, he was able to obtain it. The Grimoire of Anti-Magic! And he completely cleaves through Repchi's chains with the sword, cuts down Repchi, and Asa says, I'll become the Wizard King! My magic is never giving up! And that's my way of the ninja wizard! And...
So, be great if fucking after he does it, Uruka gives him a headband! Like, you just drop all pretenses.
No, he's already got a headband! So that's basically the end of the chapter. Asta, you know, celebrates having his own grimoire, and he and Yuno fist bump to celebrate, and they're like, yeah, let's see who becomes the Wizard King, and that's the start of their journey, and so on and so forth. By the end of it, I actually started to kind of come around on this series, opening incredibly generic for shonen action series. Oh, he has no potential. He will have to work hard to overcome his lack of potential type of thing. But I do like the twist of, he's got absolutely no magic, therefore he gets to counter magic. That's kind of a cool little play on that.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of interesting to see how they're going to try to work that into a... Like, the ability to anti-magic in a world with magic seems like that could be kind of god tier.
Yeah.
So it'll be kind of cool to see how they plan on implementing that exactly.
But, yeah, I mean, it's too many similarities to the start of Naruto account.
It does have a lot of similarities, and I think probably, like, the biggest problem I had with it is the first page really strikes you like the first page of Naruto, where it's, you know, the
show. The legend of the nine-tailed beast.
Yeah, it just rang too much like that. But my other big problem, though, was that I just didn't like Asta. Like,
he's not likable.
I was like, oh, hey, because his friend, whoever can't fucking finish his sentences, dude, he actually seemed like a decent protagonist. I was like, yeah, he's a little bit cocky, but he's actually nice. You know, he's not shitting on people. He's not like an arrogant jerk. You know,
he's you know, was raised as an orphan, so he, you know, feels the desire to help people out. You know, he helps them out with their chores and stuff. And even though he's hard on Asta, it's just because he acts like a doofus all the time.
Yeah, and he's still going he still ultimately supports him and everything. Like, he's still like, I knew you'd get a grimoire. So you're like, oh, okay, this dude's not so bad. But this other kid's just so fucking annoying.
Maybe this is going to be like the inverse of Naruto, where he's like, oh, Naruto's going to end up pretty well. And Sasuke's like, oh, God, what the fuck? And the other hand is like, oh, the rival character's pretty interesting. He's like, what the fuck is wrong with you, Asta?
All right, now, Nick, because we've talked about a new Jumpstart series, we have to just get the disclosure out of the way now. Yes, we are aware that we didn't like Roll Trigger at the start. Black Clover could get better.
It could. And honestly, it's, like I said, by the end of this, I started to kind of like it. Mm-hmm. And I do like the idea of, you know, a nullifier type of power. You know, a guy who he is special because it's interesting that, you know, his lack of potential is turned into a specialty. It's kind of like almost if Rock Lee were the main protagonist of Naruto or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they seem to imply that the two different characters are going to basically be like yin and yang type of thing. One has got the power to become the ultimate wizard, and the other has the power to become the ultimate anti-wizard type of thing. So it's interesting. It's just Asta's not very good at protagonist yet.
It also didn't help that our first example of seeing his never give up attitude is him like constantly harassing a nun to marry him.
Yeah, like the one context for never giving up is not an anime trait.
You're just like, maybe you should have started out with him doing sit-ups or something.
It could have been funny later on if he like tried to do that. But no, that's the first impression.
Like, that's the payoff you get. Like, she clearly, like, she's just like, oh, fucking Asta, always fucking trying to make me marry him. He's just like, I don't give up even though I know I have no chance. You're just like, alright, kind of weird, but still, like, it's kind of amusing as a joke. Not like, this is my establishing character moment. Yeah. I don't give up.
Alright, let's move on now to Bleach.
Oh, right, I forgot. Oh. It's Bleach. So weird not just umpity with it.
Bleach 615, all is lost. A.K.A. Orihime is useless.
Well, Nick, I think it's actually all is lost, because it's like, all and lost are so much bigger. Like, I don't know, like, is got smashed or something?
Yeah, it's like, it's not even that it's in lowercase while the other two words are, you know, capitalized. It's that the lowercase letters in those two are clearly larger.
Now, this is saying something. This is a stylistic, intentional choice by Kubo, and I'm trying to decipher, yes, everything in Bleach is intentional, Nick. Don't tell me otherwise.
I will.
I'm trying to think why is would be the stylized word in this. Maybe it's not is. Maybe all was always lost.
Yeah, I'm done. So, we open the chapter at the Kurosaki household, where Karin is, like, playing video games, and Yuzu comes and is like, oh my god, it's an earthquake! And she spills Karin's juice, and Karin's just like, ah, there goes the juice. And Yuzu's like, I'm sorry, I thought you were going to die in an earthquake. Yeah.
I mean, understandable.
So, and Grunge is like, oh, it's okay. You didn't get the game wet, which is all I care about in the midst of this earthquake.
You know, we haven't shown up in like 2 years. Yeah, it's been a little while.
Are we going to reunite the Karakura superheroes for another really bizarre out of nowhere filler arc?
Remember when they were kind of teasing that I might be the future of Soul Society, that I might be basically like Ichigo's replacement, that I had that potential?
Yeah.
That sweet arc that would skip forward 2 years and it looked like everything was going in a really good direction. Then the Fullbringers happened, or the fucking, was it Fullbringers?
Yes.
Yes, the Fullbringers happened and things stopped being good.
And yeah, for whatever reason, there are still tremors. I'm like, this is kind of unusual for an earthquake. Almost as if it isn't actually an earthquake. And we cut to, you know, the Soul King's palace where Ichigo has just gotten done cutting the dude in half. And everyone's like, oh my god, you killed the Soul King. And Jirobox says, I told you it's too late, because it will be by your hands that Ryo's life will end. And he's just like, Why did I do that? And why can't I drop this sword?
Why me sad?
And Yubok says, my shrift is A, the Almighty. I see the future of everything. I take and give all powers. I can even give you my own spiritual pressure that dwells in my sword, and my power that flowed into you called out to your blood. How can you forgive him? How can you forgive him? Is this a song he's breaking into?
Haven't you heard that new Taylor Swift beat?
If Quincy blood flows in you, you must slay the Soul King! And, but then Ichigo drops the sword, because I guess he just, like, yeah. Now that I've demonstrated that you can't drop the sword, I will make you drop the sword.
It took me so long to read that panel. Like, because I kept thinking it was someone's chest. Like, I don't know why. Like, I guess the sound effect covered up the thumb too much, so I couldn't tell what it was for the longest time.
It does actually sort of look like a really demented body, doesn't it?
Yeah, when you're, like, kind of quickly glancing through, because, I mean, I don't know about you, Nick, but I don't
take my time with Luigi.
I don't need to.
So Ichigo draws his own sword, he rushes at Jubok, and Jubok's like, do you still have a reason to fight me when the Soul Society is destined to disappear? I'm gradually drifting more and more away from Foghorn Leghorn and just going into Southern Preacher. And so we cut down to where all the Soul Reapers are gathered up, and they're like, oh my god, the building is collapsing! What's happening? Is it the enemy? No, there are no Quincy spiritual pressures in the area. What's going on? And Urahara says, oh no, is Reo dead? And Shinji says, well, what's Squad Zero doing? What's Ichigo doing?
Just like, they all sucked. Squad Zero blew.
And Kurosaki didn't make it in time. So I guess that the Serete will... No, the Soul Society and Hueco Mundo, even the world of the living, will cease to exist. Maybe you shouldn't have killed him, Jubok.
Well, maybe this is Jubok's grand plan to erase everything from existence. Which, Nick, is why he definitely needed to make sure Uryu would be his successor.
Right.
It's very important you establish the successor when you're going to end reality.
Well, and if reality ends, then we definitely know the Unohana will be dead, never coming back.
That'd be great.
Erase the last possibility of her coming back.
It's just an empty void, and Unohana just shows up. Did I make it in time? Damn.
Oh, well. So, Jubok says, Rayo was created to stabilize the Soul Society. Well, massive numbers of Kampaku pass through, but now that it is gone, not just the Soul Society, but all that is connected to it, Dongai, Hueco Mundo, the world of the living, it will all collapse, and Ichigo, it will be by your hand! And Ichigo's like, aww. So Yoruichi summons a whole bunch of strings or something, threads surrounding you, but not like binding him with them, they just like appear.
They're like a spider web around him, and not like so tight that you couldn't like probably just like duck underneath most of them, it looks like.
Like she sets up a security system so that he won't be able to move without tripping the alarm or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and then he puts on like a skin toot cat suit and just fucking backflips through them.
I'm not saying I want you to draw Jubok infiltrating
like he's in like the Black Widow kind of like skin tight jumpsuit, but he's still like he's still always getting the ass poses just like her. He's like, well, you haven't seen what the Almighty can really do. Some reason he has a giant rack.
Runs into Black Cat coming the other way. Oh god. So Yoruichi says, oh, you talk too much. And thanks to that, you left yourself vulnerable. Well, why didn't you attack me then? You just put all these weird strings around me. What's up with that? So Yoruichi says, oh my god. Yoruichi says, Inoue, restore Reo with your power. And Rihime says, okay. She sends out her Santen Keshun. She starts to use her restoring powers. And then her restoring bubble just shatters around it. And Jubok says, how foolish! Do you really believe a human can bring Reo back to life? It's impossible! He will never be brought back to life! Okay. I want you guys to flip back with me about a couple hundred chapters. to an Aizen kidnapped Orihime, and she restored Grimmjow's arm. And Aizen said that her power could reject reality. It could literally intrude into the realm of God.
Into the realm of God, Nick. Not over it, though. Mm-mm. He still has house rules, I guess.
It's like, well, she's here, right? She's in the realm of God. So she can't go any further than this, because she is in the realm of God. I'm just saying, like, God is dead, basically. He's not specifically God, but he is the king of the afterlife, and reality is founded upon his whim. He is basically God. And Aizen said, you can intrude into the realm of God. And she specifically tries to do just that.
You know what the best part of this is, Nick?
What's the best part of this?
All Orihime has gained from this stupid arc is that fucking dress with the boobs cut out in the middle.
As Power Girl gains a costume that finally makes her look like a real superhero, Orihime boldly steps into the cleavage window character role.
Oh, man. It's just... Wow. Like, the one moment everyone's like, oh, right.
You should have done.
The one awesome thing Orihime can finally do to start getting things moving. They're like, nah, I can't do that.
It's like, oh, I guess it's a good thing that Ichibei was able to restore himself with his own power. Because, oh, man, Orihime would not be able to do anything with him. Oh, phone's ringing out.
Oh, so, yeah. Viewbox basically just like, no, your power doesn't work that way. Rayo will never be brought back to life. And then we cut away to Renji, and he's just like, are you telling us that the Soul Society and the World of the Living are gonna disappear? Isn't there something we could do? And Sickly Captain, whose name I can't remember, is like,
Ugetake.
He's giving like a stern glare, like, Nick, do you think he has a plan?
Maybe.
I'll tell you,
other than Urihime, so he has a chance of being useful.
I want to note one thing that I actually did like in this chapter. Okay. I liked the scene where Urahara finds out that Ryu's dead, because we've never seen
him. Make it sound serious, yeah.
Well, we've never seen Urahara, like, completely, baffled by something before. Like, usually he's the guy one step ahead of things. He's never the guy who's being surprised by the way things have gone. So to see
sometimes he's caught off guard for an instant, but yeah.
Yeah, this is like one time where he's like, oh, fuck.
What are we gonna do, guys? Oh, man. Yeah, I thought it was actually kind of effective. You know, it was like probably one of the most effective characters you could have done that scene with. But, oh my god.
Though it does make last week feel a little bit worthless with everyone like, don't worry, captains.
That's what we're gonna do. We're gonna go up to the Soul King's Palace doing all this. Actually, maybe we're too late. There might not be a Soul King's Palace or anything before we're finished here.
God, I hope they don't go anywhere. That's like, my greatest joy in Bleach now is hoping that the things he set up just never happen. I hope we never see Grimmjow. I hope the Fullbringers never show up again. I hope the Shinigami never fucking leave that room. I hope Kensai and Rose never come back to life. Ah, oh, it's what I live for at this point, Nick.
So it was like a complete void. Unohana is there, and Hitsugaya is still a zombie there, basically.
Yeah, Hitsugaya is there. And, like, at the last chat, like, the last page of Bleach, there's, like, a full shot of everybody, and you just see Grimmjow's foot entering in, and then it's credits.
And, like, that one member of the Venenreich who didn't get a letter after all the letters were taken up explains what his extra letter was.
I'm a Sternger ampersand. It's not as threatening. I'm the and, which is kind of unfortunate, because there's nothing else ampersand really means.
I actually remember seeing one recently that ampersand is actually just a way that people shorthanded and, like, et, a while ago.
There we go.
Like the Latin term et, meaning and. It's like an E and a T really close together, and then, like, all deformed and having sex, essentially.
Oh, it's got kind of kinky.
Oh, yeah, letters are sexy, man.
It's so sensual.
Oh, man. I freaking love uppercase I. Ugh.
So many dongles.
All right. Fairy Tale.
Yes, Fairy Tale, chapter 400.
Maybe you should not have made a perverted joke before going into Fairy Tale.
Oh, don't worry, we'll get into that. Chapter 420, Lamia Scales, Thanksgiving Day. Oh. And our cover page is Lucy.
Hey, Chris, chapter 420.
Oh, blaze it up, Nick. This would probably be a pretty good chapter to get high to, if that's your thing.
Oh my god.
The cover page is Lucy, and she's bent over. Well, not bent over. She's on her knees, and she's, like, fixing her hair. And the text is, like, all girls have magic that makes them beautiful. Which is, like, a sweet sentiment, I guess, for, you know, if you're, you know, a grandma to share with her granddaughter at, like, her fourth birthday party. But here it just seems a little bit creepy, like, all girls have an angle for me to exploit. All girls have a fetish for Hero, as we'll come to see.
Hero's like, don't worry, female character. I think you're sexy in some way.
People said that cowgirls weren't a hot enough fucking fan service gimmick, but I'll find it. So we cut ahead to the village of Tully, where some arc in Fairy Tale happened, but I don't remember which one. But there was a clock tower that Ichigo, that Natsu destroyed at some point, and they referenced that.
Yeah, I do think that that's kind of funny.
It's funny. I cannot remember when they went to this place, though. So
I have no clue. I do like I was like, oh, it's all different. You know, you can tell where there is the difference between the old and the new. Maybe I should just break it again.
And Natsu's complaining. He's like, I want to stretch. I've got all this strength. I want to, you know, let it all out. And that magic game wasn't anything worthwhile at all. You know, I want to fight Gray, and then I'm going to challenge Urza and Luxus. And, you know, in the meantime, Lucy, you fight me. And she's like, no, but I do have something that I've been kind of working on the past years that might be worth something. But before we can actually find out what that is, Natsu has to blow wind up Lucy's skirt.
It's so, the only way he could have made this shot, Chris.
Yes. It's what he had to do. I actually am excited at the idea, though, that Lucy, in the past 2 years, hasn't just been walking around the towel staring at, like, a wall of all of her friends, that she actually has been working on something, so...
I have gotten progressively more optimistic about Lucy.
Yes.
Since we came back from the time skip. At first, it was just like, oh, she did nothing, but now it's like, oh, no, she was working on this. It's like, oh, she did get stronger, okay.
Yeah, let's see where they're going with that. But anyway, Natsu spits basically, I guess it's a fireball, but it seemed like it might be wind because it blows up her skirt. Anyway, it seems dangerous for him to be shooting fire that was melting stone right between Lucy's legs, but I guess she's cool with it.
Well, and the fire doesn't actually burn the guys it hits. It, like, punches them.
That is true. And the fire goes flying, and it nails two guys who are trying to rob a cart. So Natsu, I guess, has
super sense.
Yes, super awesome telescopic eyes of some kind. Anyway, we cut to why did I blank on the word inn? We cut to an inn where Natsu's like, wait.
There's a sign that says inn, I-N, too.
I know. I was staring at it, and I was just like, what the fuck do they call these things? Where Natsu's like, wait, you don't know where anybody is? And she's like, well, I mean, I tried to check
on it.
First
of all, let me recline this chair in such a way that I show as much leg as possible.
Yeah, I'm going to take off my boots so you get all of my leg possible. All that would be considered, I guess, shameless but not indecent.
Am I wearing panties? You can't tell.
Who knows? I'm Lucy, though, so probably not. Well, actually, we do know she is because we actually see her panties in several shots before.
Did I take the panties off when we got to the inn?
Yeah. No. She's like, I took my boots off. Maybe I took more. And she notes, they're like, look, we're in the town, we're going to the town where Lamia's skill is, and, you know, we'll see Lion and Jura, and, you know, someone else is there, and she gives, like, a wink. So we cut to them visiting the town of Margaret, where they're having their Thanksgiving Day, and we see Lamia's scale, and they aren't exploded or disbanded, so I'm kind of curious why they didn't bother participating in the magic games, but I guess we'll find out.
Too busy preparing for this.
Yeah, as all the different members of the Mia scale are doing various talents. You know, Lion comes out and uses his animal ice shape to create rabbits and all these things that are bounced around and entertain the children. Toby comes out to do impressions of himself because he's...
Yeah, he's just like, an idiot. I'm about to do an impression of me when I'm sad.
Yeah, oh! And everyone's like, God, you suck. Their guildmaster comes out, and she starts to do, like, foreign dance, where she starts to strip at the end, which I actually found kind of amusing. because it wasn't shameless fan service. But then two panels later, there's shameless fan service.
Yeah.
As they introduce the angels of our guild. And you might recall, there was Sherry, who was the god air dragon slayer. Air god slayer before. So who's the other angel? Why, it's fucking Wendy, of course. As it's Sharia and Wendy, the Sky Sisters, who parade around in skimpy dresses and dance cheesy pop music for their loyal fans. She's older, Nick. She's a year older, so it's not as creepy, right?
No, it's still creepy.
She doesn't look like she's gotten any older.
It is equally as creepy as every J-pop girl group where the girls are like 14 and are sexualized.
And it's like,
look at what freaking Sherry is wearing.
It's
Wendy at least looks like she's trying to actually look like a cherub. Sherry's just like, look at me. Look at that cleavage.
She's got her little cocktail dress on, you know? Well, I'm trying to remember if they mentioned how old Sherry ever was, or Sharia. Like, I'm trying to remember if they ever noted, because I feel like she could be of age, and maybe that's the difference they're playing with, because, you know, Wendy's at least got, like, a top to her dress, so maybe they're playing on that. The weird thing is, though, is that their hit song is called Slayer Love of an Angel, so they bounce around going Slayer Love Forever.
Well, you know, you couldn't have expected, you know, what were you expecting? Like, were you expecting, like, an awesome full list of lyrics or something like that for this one gag?
I guess I was expecting, hopefully, more from Wendy's grand return
to the
series.
She's 15!
She's 15?
She's 15.
Well, hold on. 15 then? So a year later, she's 16.
No, oh. Okay, 16.
Yeah, she's 16 now. So it's not as horrifically creepy, Nick. So they're singing their song, and Natsu is watching, like, what's going on? And
never felt like Natsu is more relatable to me and than in this chapter.
For some reason, Happy's like, I could get to like this forever, which is absurdly creepy on several levels. One, you're a cat. Two, she's 14. Three, she's your friend from the guild. Why are you sexualizing her this creepily?
I think he's meant to be talking about the song.
God, the song sucks, but alright, I'll accept that as just a way to get away from that.
I like how Lucy is like, you know everyone's got to do, you know, she decided to join the guild, you know, that she had to do something, and it's like, that's not what I've got a problem with.
He's like, I'd have been totally fine if she joined a guild to do work. I didn't think she'd join a guild to fucking pop sing. You can't imagine this is something they spontaneously came up with. Does she have robot cat ears as well?
I don't know if they're robot, but she is definitely wearing, like, something. Ah. I think they are supposed to be cat ears. Yeah, because they're not bows. They're just, like, little horns.
Anyway, they're talking about how this is the Harvest Festival, and it's a celebration that builds a sense of solidarity between the guild and the town. And Natsu's like, we have to get Wendy back to the straight and narrow.
Natsu is my hero now.
And Lucy's like, it's not like she's off it at the moment. You know, kind of like, no, a little bit. As Happy Wonder's like, hey, where's Carla? And she's like, I'm here. I imagined you would turn up sooner or later. Natsu, Lucy, and male cat. Oh, I do apologize. Happy, as we see Carla, and she is a person now. Like Lily Panther, she seems to have finally obtained the ability to transform. And she is, of course, an adorable-looking cat girl in a miniskirt. With a cat tail with a little bow on it. And somewhere out there, Lasana is crying because her gimmick's been taken. So she's going to have to find a new sexual fetish to jump on.
I think that my first instinct was like, oh, she's going to look more adult. Would have been just like, gets to go full-on cat girl. At least she looks professional.
At least she's not. No, it's not the worst. I've seen some people point this out and they're like, God, this is awful. I'm like, it's actually makes sense. I mean, sure, Lily Panther, when he transforms, is like a 6-foot-tall panther, muscular Adonis, but, you know, Carla's a different character. I'm fine with this.
Different personality. She is not a combat type of person.
So I could absolutely see this. And like, you know, like her, I wanted to say master, but I guess they're not like a master pet relationship. It's like a friend thing. But it's basically though, like Wendy, she looks younger. She's kind of a younger looking kind of cat. It makes sense in its way.
Yeah.
So.
And yeah, I mean, it's like this could have been so much worse. Yeah. Especially considering what else happened. Imagine if Carla had also been on stage with them.
Yeah. She could be not wearing pants. This could be like a halter top. There could be a lot worse things going on here.
And that's not quite the end of the chapter.
No, and you know, the three fairy tale gang members are like, huh? But we cut away to a group of mysterious shadowy figures who are like, the whole town's going gaga over them for Thanksgiving Day. It's disgusting. And one of his annoying members is like, Slayer love! Slayer love! Shut up! This night, the iron hammer of justice falls on Lamia, and Bloody Thanksgiving will commence.
Bloody Thanksgiving is going to be the title of my debut album.
Oh, that's awesome, Nick.
Yeah.
That is going to be great.
With the hot single track, Sweet Potato Massacre.
Sweet Potato Massacre. Nick, do you think these guys are going to beat Fairy Tail?
No.
All right, well, that's the end of that chapter.
Take care of that.
Done and done. All right, so what happened in Food Wars, Nick?
We got what we asked for. Fairy Tail did not get back together in one chapter.
Oh, it would have been more amusing that way, but I am glad to see we're going to take this slowly. I see what these guys are here for. They're here for us to get a chance to see Fairy Tail go up against a rival of some discernible strength. We'll get to see Wendy. Presumably, she has not just been practicing her fucking pop idol moves this entire time, and she's strengthened herself like Lucy. You know, she'll have talents to show off, so looking forward to seeing that.
Go to the next chapter. They try to jump Wendy. They just do a weird idol dance, and all the people have nosebleeds, and then get arrested for being perverts.
Wendy's like, did you get any stronger? She's just like, no, but I bought all these sweet bikinis. You're just like, God damn it.
No, but I've mastered how to do creepy fan service.
I've mastered Lucy's art of bending over just enough to show all of my leg, but not my actual underwear.
Okay. Food War Shokugeki no Soma, Chapter 106, A Busy Restaurant Drowning in Problems. Get an awesome, goofy fucking title picture, which is Soma as a giant mech controlled by Arata, who is on his shoulder with a remote control. It's so weird. Oh, God. So, Arata and Soma have arrived at this restaurant, Nitamura's Western Cuisine, where all the customers were upset. You know, orders came in too slowly. They weren't happy with the service. So the two of them are now greeted in a now empty restaurant by Mamoru Mitamura, who is the third generation owner and chef of the restaurant. And so he says, you know, I'm sorry you had to see that. Arata is very courteous to him. She bows to him and introduces herself. She says, it is my honor to spend the next week working under your supervision for Stagiaire Week. I'm sure I will have much to learn, but I fully intend to do my very best to perform my duties to your satisfaction. And then someone just says, nice to meet you. She just says it. It's like, got his hand on his neck. He's like, do-do-do-do-do.
He's like, all right, later. Sounds cool, kid. You want to clean out the grease pit?
And Mitamura is just like, can I have you guys autographs? And like, what really? Well, yeah, you guys are from the Totsuki Institute. You know, I mean, so you're the best. You know, every aspiring chef dreams of going there. He's got this like starstruck expression on his face, saying, "Oh, it's a grand palace of gourmet where only the best of the best are permitted." This goes on.
Nick,
about
hold on, real quick. Totally off topic. Who was the 14th president of the United States? It was Franklin Pierce. I got it. Don't worry. Go ahead.
Oh, fuck. I would have never gotten that. If you would ask me to name all the presidents, you would have been like dead last.
Like, somehow he got John Adams twice, but fucking still couldn't remember fucking Fillmore or Pierce. I forgot which one we were even talking about.
You just said Franklin Pierce. I would remember Fillmore eventually. It'll take it a while, though. Anyway. So, Mitamura? I keep on forgetting this guy's name. It's so easy to forget his name, even though he's wearing the name on his apron. You know, so he says, like, you know, you guys could become celebrities known all across the world, so this is a huge, a deal for me. And Arato is like, oh, you know, no, I'm not really special. And so he brings them both in, gives them their uniforms, and Soma is like, oh, it feels so weird to be staying in a real kitchen in something other than a Yukihira t-shirt. Hey, are you done changing, Arato? No, I have to show people my shoulders. I'm disrobing and embarrassed.
I was so impressed with Shokugeki no Soma in this. Because the moment I was like, oh, they have to change into their costume, I was like, all right, here's where we set up the very easy, shameless girl changing scene. And they have one, like, oh, let's see her in her underwear, but you, like, you only get to see the, like, strap of her bra, and then cut to, like, the next page, she's in her uniform, and it's, like, an actual tasteful uniform. Mm-hmm. Like, I was just expecting so much, like, a just completely...
The uniform is just the apron.
Yeah, I was expecting, like, a mini skirt at the end of it, and, like, thigh-high stockings, or I was, like, expecting, like, an elaborate scene where fucking Soma walks in her, and she's naked, or she's in her underwear, just like, oh, get out of here, you... nasty boy! Like, just something like that. I was pleasantly surprised.
No, she gets embarrassed because he just addresses her while she is changing.
That is kind of weird, though.
Well, but yeah, like, I mean, if you were like, I'm freaking naked in here, no, don't come in. Leave me alone. I'm fucking putting my pants on.
Yeah, come on now.
That's understandable. So you get the character moment without the shamelessness. And it's Shokugeki no Soma.
Yeah, I was like, a series drawn by a known hentai artist and fucking known for its shameless fan service is the one series this week that was probably the most respectful to women out of anything.
Well, she wasn't eating anything, so she couldn't have had that scene, yeah. Obviously. Yeah. It's like she eats something there. It's like being caught in the middle of things. Oh, God. So, someone says, you know, they... talk for a bit, and he's like, so, you know, this is like the first time we've actually gotten to hang around just the two of us, because you're usually just hanging around with Nakiri. By the way, the next time you see her, no, there will be no next time. I will not be returning to Miss Arena's side, because I failed during the quarterfinals of the Fall Classic, and I'm no longer worthy of that honor. And so it's like, oh yeah, you got beat by Hayama. Yeah, I was back in the back when they announced you. Oh, stop! Shut up! It's not funny.
Jerk face.
And she goes on and on about how great Arena is, and how she just has no right to stand in her presence because I would only damage her image. And someone's like, come on, you just lost once. And, hey, where are you going? Oh.
Hey, Nick, in the Harry Potter series, what was unusual about the dog Fluffy?
He was a Cerberus that had three heads.
Oh, phew, thank God. I don't know how that qualifies under art, but anyway, go ahead.
Well, I guess if you say that books or movies are art.
But there's an entertainment category for that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Definitely pop culture more than art. So, I can't believe you're pulling me over. You're like, I have to do this a second time so that he'll call me out on it.
I was going to keep doing it too, and eventually he'd be like, still fucking playing trivia crack.
So, basically, the day starts up with them on duty, and so someone starts to suggest, like, oh, you know, I'll handle taking orders, so why don't you? And Arata's like, don't presume to order me around. Just because you have real-world experience doesn't give you the right to act all high and mighty, because I've taken classes where students worked in tandem to simulate these exact work environments, so thank you very much. I passed them all with speed and efficiency, and I don't foresee having any problems with Stagiaire Week. And so it says, well, yeah, but you've never had to deal with a whole... He says a crush. I think he means rush. Of orders coming at you all at once, have you? And the ground starts to shake. Oh god, that earthquake from Bleach is here!
It's affected everybody now!
Midamura comes in and is like, the Rayo is dead! Jubox, the first one to come in through the door. I will have chicken.
He's like, well, tell me what your menu is. I am very busy, though, so if you could please hurry it up.
Take an order from Yuno. And what would you like for your sides? I would like mashed potatoes with...
And then the fucking NPC from that world comes in. They're just like, would you guys have any roller coaster?
Someone's like, yes, we do.
We have all of those things.
Excellent. Anyway, so people, Arata is like, oh my god, because the rush of people come in, And Naranja's all freaked out because all the tables are filled up immediately. Orders are coming flying in. She starts to get overwhelmed. And she remembers what Minamura said to them, which was, it used to be that our customer base was primarily made up of a few loyal locals. We would have only fill up maybe a day or two a week, and even then only gradually. But now, the Shinkansen bullet trains stop at the nearby station. And 6 months ago, we started to get flooded by train passengers that come all at once, order all at once, and try to pay all at once. And the rush is so overwhelming, we fall further and further behind. And then customers get tired of waiting and cancel their orders. So, presumably, although customers would probably, you know, get their orders at the same amount as before, the reputation of the restaurant would sink like a fucking stone because of the disappointed customers leaving, I believe is the point of that. So people start to get overwhelmed and like, oh my god, the dirty dishes are piling up, we need more clean ones. And I was like, okay, I'll do it, I'll take care of it. People are starting to leave because they're not getting their orders in. Another rush of customers come in just when it seems like it's going to wind down, and Naruto thinks to herself, one wave leaves only to have another come crashing in behind it. It's like a battlefield. And you imagine they're on the fucking military fucking war zone being stalked by a tank.
It's just like in military fatigues, like, they don't stop. I got like All You Need Is Kill flashbacks.
It's like the least sexy like comparison I've ever seen in Shokugeki no Soma. But then Soma takes over. He like takes one of the orders and he's like, all right, table for three and another for four. All right. And he just, you know, handing them all with ease. He's quickly handing out orders and people are very pleased with him. He's rallying up orders very easily, taking them all very easily, just like handling them without any trouble. And eventually he kind of looks over, sees that a table isn't being taken care of. And so he's, you know, hands off the orders to Arato and says, would you handle the tables for a second? He steps into the kitchen and he knocks out a whole bunch of orders and stuff so that the one table that's desperate for attention gets them. And he apologizes profusely for being late and so on. And they get all very easily because he's used to this. And Arato, of course, gets really angry with Soma as he just basically takes over the kitchen and says, come on, you know, communication's breaking down. Find out what's happening in the kitchen and so on. And of course, just completely ignoring what he said before when she said, don't order me around and stuff. So she grits her teeth and rushes off into the kitchen and tries to get a handle on things, but she starts to get overwhelmed and she starts to tear up and just gets more and more frustrated because she remembers losing to Hayama, not being worthy of Irina's attention. Finally, the day ends, and everyone's like, oh, Soma, you did it. Not one customer actually cast an order today. Not one. You're so impressive. Yeah, Totsugi students are so great. And Arata's like, yeah, Soma is great because of his experience. Yeah, he did really well. And they're like, no, you did great, too. I mean, by the time dinner rolled around, you had handle on absolutely everything. You were a big help, and you picked on everything so fast. And she gets all flustered and blushes, and Soma smacks his hand on her back, and she's like, what are you doing? He's like, no, good work today. And keep it up. And so she's like, don't you dare order me around. How dare you say I did a good job. But then we get narration that says the two of them hadn't yet discovered the real trial hidden within Stagiaire Week. Who is it? Who is fit to be first class and who will be stuck second rate? The true test is just beginning.
Next week, the school just pays some dude to come in everybody's stores and just take a dump in the restaurant. They're like, oh, I had to clean this up. And once they do it, they're like, there, you've made physical progress. They're like, that was it? They're like, yes, this is just a week to troll our students. Oh, we love it so.
It's a measurable contribution. Cleaned up shit on the table.
In truth, though, I like this chapter a lot. I have no real clue who this character is. But this character, or this chapter, did a lot to kind of tell me her story regardless, so...
Honestly, all the stuff that they told you, that has been her character so far.
Yeah, like...
She has been Irina's assistant, she has a pretty obvious semi-crush on Irina. She kind of, like, worships the ground at her feet and stuff. She gets really, really flustered whenever Irina is nice to her and stuff. And she entered the tournament, and she lost in the quarterfinals to Hayama. And she was very sad about it.
And I like that this chapter was basically her saying, like, I don't want you to, you know, talk down to me. I'm going to do this on my own and, you know, constantly feeling inadequate as this was a situation that really seemed to play more to Soma's strength than hers. But at the end, you know, hey, actually did a good job. You know, you're in this school for a reason, and you pick things up pretty quickly.
I also really liked the show-don't-tell element of her kind of breakdown and her gathering herself. There was no, like, how can I do this? I'm just continuing falling behind and disappointing people, but no, I've got to be strong and get back to you. No, it was just like, she was upset, she wiped her face off, she smacked herself into action, and then she kept on powering through. And that was all you need to see.
I thought it was an excellent chapter. Really dug it.
So let's move on to Kagami Gummy.
No, Tagakyo Hotai!
Right. I think that was just because this was the next one I came across. Speaking of Gakyo Hotai, however, this is chapter 10.
Mm-hmm.
Recall that what came the week before Gakyo Hotai? Do you remember?
I mean, chapter 9? This is like a trick question.
The series that debuted, I should say.
Oh, E-Robot, which is gone.
It's over.
It ended. It did
11 chapters.
It wasn't just so bad, they were like, all right, well, you're going to have to wrap up. They were so bad, they're like, just get out. Just get out.
I mean, I know it's like, just like...
How am I going to wrap up my intricate plot of her using eroticism to save the world and bring about peace?
Oh, God. I mean, I imagine it was because they just had a whole bunch of series they wanted to debut on a row, but yeah, they saw an opportunity to end that series, and they fucking took it. 11 chapters, that is the shortest run for a series that, like, was not intended to be ongoing that I've ever heard. Oh, my God.
I think Jocko, the Galactic Patrolman, went longer.
It did.
Oh, man, that is satisfying.
So, Gakyo Hotai, chapter 10... Which, what is the chapter title?
Inusaru Reunion.
Right, there it is, okay. So, this opens up with another, explanation. Remember, 5 years ago, there was an incident at a certain grade school where an entire class was massacred. Often called the Bloody Classroom Session, it is also known as the First Classroom Arbitration. So, but then, come back to the present, where these two guys are confronting Baku, and they're like, oh, plagiarism! And so Baku's like, what the hell's going on? Explain to me. And so one of them says, I am Vin Daichi, a.k.a. Class 6-2's Da Vinci. And the other says, I am Hikari Takasu, also known as 6-3's Picasso.
Nick, did you know Picasso was well known for his efforts in creating cubism? I didn't. I got that question twice in Trivia Crack and really? Fucked it up both times. I'm like, maybe it's surrealism this time.
Oh, I just love it. It's just like the most blatant parody names. It was like, also known as Da Vinci.
Yeah, not even like, we'll just say, like, we'll just get it out there. I'm Da Vinci, he's Picasso.
Oh, God. They're like, oh, we have long competed head-to-head as the two great maestros of Tenman Elementary Fine Arts World. You're elementary students! What do you know about fine art? And they're like, saying, it's like, oh, rumors have started flying that I was copying his work. But really, he's copying me! And everyone's like, no, I'm suffering due to these damaging rumors. You know, it's like, I want to sue for slander. And they're really at each other's throats. So, Abaka says, okay, so you're accusing each other of poaching, claiming yours is the original, so you want a copyright suit. Well, no, I'm not going to do that because it's really difficult, and, there are limits to people's scopes of expression, so some measure of similarity is inevitable. So it's human nature to want to shout plagiarism, so, just show me your works. I'm sure that, we'll look into this and we'll see they're really not all that similar at all. Looks at them, they're the exact same fucking picture.
He's just like, it's such a ticky-tack thing, and they're really, oh, wow, the exact same fuck.
And it's not even something like, oh, they both drew, like, a tree the exact same way. No, it's a tree on a planet with a spaceship orbiting it, two astronauts orbiting around that as well, and everything is the exact same.
Yeah.
And so Baku looks at him and is like, all right, which of you really fucking copied it? Just be honest with me. Mr. Attorney won't be mad. They're just, like, filling each other's throats. So Baku's like, all right. Save your fighting for the classroom session. Yeah, I'll take care of the arrangements and stuff. And so they're like, yeah, you're going to get it. No, you're going to get it. But Abaka thinks to himself, oh, wait, it's a copyright suit. That means it's going to be a civil case next. And at that moment, someone comes dashing through the school, and some of the various students and the teacher are like, "Hey, you know, don't no running in the halls." And Higashide actually like snatches the guy, like he trips him up, and then tries to grab him, and he says, "You know, no running in the halls. That's our school's most sacred rule, and I'll stop you as the president of class 6-3." And it's a fucking ninja kid who he stopped, and so. Then Higashide tries to stop him after the guy says, "I win," and then he runs away, and Higashide is like, "What the shuriken shaped magnets are sticking me to the not shuriken, shuriken shaped magnets."
Yeah, it'd be illegal to bring weapons into school, Nick.
Oh god. So then we cut into, you know, the under the elephant slide, law office where Baku is, and Tento is there too, and Baku's like, "Yeah, I'm gonna have a civil suit," and so Tento's like, "What's a civil suit?" Maybe I should just talk like that for Tento all the time, because that's "Oh, Baku, I don't get it. What's the difference between them?"
"Are you saying there's a different kind of suit for when people do other sort of things?
Do you need to wear a tie for one and a bow tie for the other?
Should I dunk head in toilet?
My hair looks good, right?
I draw circles on it so I could be a pretty ladybug."
"But not a real ladybug. I am still a boy after all."
The creative buck is just like, I keep him around because I feel so bad for him.
Yeah, keep him around because he's desperate for attention. He doesn't ask you for pay.
The quado of this school, someone had to take care of him.
So, but yeah, Baku basically explains what is the actual difference between civil and criminal cases, which is an attorney, a criminal case has a plaintiff and a defendant, but in a civil case, there are just attorneys for both sides. There is no, like, the accused and accuser. Both of them are accusing each other. You have to determine who is right, as opposed to if person A is guilty or innocent. So, he does it very quickly, too, so.
Yeah, I was very impressed by that. And it's kind of an interesting dynamic, because, you know, this manga is always going to be called the Phoenix Wright series, but Phoenix Wright never features civil cases. It's always murder cases or cases where it would just be an attorney versus a prosecutor. So it's kind of cool seeing that this is a new dynamic that's going to be brought up of an attorney versus attorney.
So Abak is like, "All right, the opposing counsel is..." Oh, no. And so, "This is the pits," he says, because it's that guy he knows. And Tendo's like, "You know him?"
"Who that, boss?"
So that moment, Sarutobi shows up and releases his jutsu of camouflage. And Tendo's like, "When in the world did he get here? Don't stand on that, I just cleaned it."
"I make that nice look yesterday."
And then for some reason, Sarutobi uses jutsu of multi-sikida and just appears behind them. Cloth, and he's like, "This is an original ninja art of mine, where there's wire laced through my clothes," and Ibuka's just pissed off at him. And Ibuka says, "You came to my office without permission. That's a violation of Article 130 of the Penal Code, breaking and entering, so you want me to sue you?" "Well, no, that's why I'm divulging my ninja arts as a, are you willing to repeat before a judge? And aren't you a sixth grader now, or do you happen to be a giant first grader? You're not, right? Why are you stripping down to your underwear? Which is also a violation of Article 174 of the Penal Code, public lewdness." And so Sarutobi just, like, explodes with anger. He starts to cry. "Shut up!
You're such a jerk! Stop roleplaying me!"
And, like, he, like, throws Shuriken out the door. He's so upset. Sarutobi says, "Well, you know, that's my rival for you. The same old Ibaku, eh? You and your Ranpa." And I was like, "You and stupid face, Sarutobi."
"What? Do you people know each other?"
"Who's that Sarutobi guy?"
"Boss, you've been talking to this person as though you know him. Have you two maybe met someplace before?"
Oh my god. And Tento's gonna stick around forever. We're never getting rid of this character. Sarutobi introduced himself. "I'm Kotaro Sarutobi, age 12. He's posing with shuriken and a kunai. "My hobby is ninja arts. Nin. Fucking nerd. And Bug says, "Yeah, I went to the same grade school and I just haven't been able to get rid of him since." I love how he says his introduction to his origin story. He's like, supposedly there's a ninja village deep in the mountains somewhere, and he's from there. Or so he claims.
Well, that's what he says. It's probably not true, and he's just a weirdo.
Says, I've been keeping tabs on you via the President's Journal. Looks like you've had a good run lately, but now that you're up against me, your winning streak's about to end. Okay. I like it says, yeah, well, I haven't been keeping up on your current status. Oh, how dare you! And starts throwing stuff. It's like, what's up with a book and shit? And then Tenta says, this person is our next foe? Are you really a lawyer, Sawatobi?
Can you be lawyer, too? Can me be lawyer? I'll defend all the ladybugs that people would squish.
I'll get that gun. Oh, God. He's like, you know, well, you know, you keep on losing in these battles of logic with Baku. I don't know if you'd really be suited to this, and Sarutobi gets mad at this, too. And so Baku says, you know, like, we're really completely incompatible. I gets on my nerves and stuff, so that's why I was really upset when he announced my point, basically. So Sarutobi says, oh, by the way, I'm going to be transferring into Tenpin Elementary next week, and that's for the same reason as you, so I have a proposal for you today. Abaku, we bet this office on next week's session. In short, this space will become my office if I win, and you'll start working for me. He, like, fantasizes about the place being turned into this Japanese-style thing, like a ninja suit all over the elephant slide, and being served by Abaku, who's wearing, like, a kimono and down his knees and stuff. And he says, your ninja meal, master. Ninja meal!
Everything about this kid's fucking ninjas, dude.
But Sarutobi says, you know, it's like, yo, this town ain't big enough for the two of us. You don't need two attorneys in the same class. So, my rival, let's decide this in court once and for all. Which of us is better? I fucking love this, because Ibaka says, no.
There is no advantage to me doing this.
I have nothing to gain from this. And classroom sessions aren't a game. You know, there's accused and plaintiffs, you know, school lives could be greatly impacted. And for you to think of, you know, using that as the option for wager, how dare you call yourself an attorney? And you've been throwing shuriken around and drawing your katana, but, you know, that's dangerous. If you were to hit someone in the eye, shut up!
Yeah, I love that he basically just argues him into the point where he's just like, fuck, I'm leaving! God, stop arguing me down!
He's like, ah, oh, just you wait, Abaku, I'll beat you! And Tento's like, he left!
He go bye-bye now! But he took all of his clothes!
I almost feel bad about this, but everything Tento says...
it's just the stupidest, most basic observations.
So Baku's
man, like, go outdoor!
Baku's like, oh, what a relief. Spread some purifying salt around.
He has this big smile.
Thank God that asshole's gone. So Ibaka spends some time puzzling over the two identical works, and he's like, oh, God. If it isn't plagiarism, you know, how's it possible these two guys could draw the same thing by pure coincidence? And factoring in that my opponent is Sarutobi, I have a feeling this copyright suit isn't going to be so straightforward. So Tento catches the chin and says, you know, it's almost the end of the school day. Not an obvious fact, because Abaku didn't know that. So.
I make time good!
Oh. As Tento's too special, he's staying the obvious and keeping track of the passage of time.
He draws a clock on his face. And he just keeps drawing new lines for the minute hand. To his face.
The time is now 10:01. The time is now 10:02.
His face is all covered in crayon marks.
Oh, God. So then I was really confident that Ibaka won't lose, but Ibaka says, well, to be brutally frank, he's probably better than me. The three tongues. Three great schoolers in the classroom session world said to possess a divine tongue. Sarutobi and I are two of them. My record is 60 wins and 24 losses, but Sarutobi's is 48 wins and no losses. He really is the worst possible opponent. By the numbers, he's stronger than me, stronger than anyone else. Sarutobi's invincible, the one attorney in all of Japan who has never lost a case.
Ooh.
That's the end of it. As, you know, we get the confirmation that Sarutobi was in the Onigashima class along with the Inugami, presumably also that third of the Silver Tongues, or Divine Tongues, you know. So, but yeah, I like this. Introducing a new kind of, you know, lawyer character, but not really, sort of. Yeah.
It's first and foremost, is the right time to introduce him. This is the point. We've seen Pine a couple times, you know, Baku's beaten her rather thoroughly each time. We've kind of slowly grown with her character, but it's time for Baku to face a challenge, and obviously this is a huge one to throw in front of him, you know. I mean, at the Ace Attorney games, you always start off, you beat Winston Payne, or Gaspin Payne, and every name in Ace Attorney is an awful pun, usually.
Gaspin Payne is the best.
Gaspin Payne, yes. I think my favorite was Luke Atme, who was just this really narcissistic magician. Oh, God. No, the names in that game were fucking great. But anyway, like, you eventually advance from fucking the Pains into one of the actual, like, real prosecutors. And that's what this series kind of is a good place to do, to graduate from Pine into, you know, now Shiratobi. And I think, I mean, I kind of want to see where this case is going to go first, but I would not be shocked if this is the first case Abakua loses that we see in this series, because the stakes in this don't seem dramatically high.
Right. I mean, it's just, you plagiarized someone or something.
Yeah. I imagine even if he loses, it's not though as though his client will be under, you know, harsh circumstances and get sent to, you know, Onigashima Monastery or anything like that. Depends on how things go. But we also know that Abaku has lost before. He doesn't have a spotless record to be ruined here.
Yeah, like what? What did it say? Like 24 losses?
20 losses, something like that.
That's quite a few. Yeah.
So,
and also, there is also the possibility maybe it will be a draw. Maybe some circumstances led to them happening to create the same thing.
Judge throws the case out. Something like that. I just think it'd be cool, we're going to keep the Saratobi guy around and keep his, you know, spotless record clean. I can imagine them kind of doing that. And I think he's going to be a cool antagonist going forward, and eventually he'll be an ally, since he's also an attorney. I can see, you know, eventually a point coming in where he's going to be an ally for Abaku. So I'm really curious to see where this is going to go. I'm excited to kind of see what Saratobi's talent is. You know, there's a reason why he's undefeated, and it's not that he has magnetic shurikens and screams a lot.
I do think that it would probably kind of be a waste to have this guy built up as this undefeated monster just to have John Cena beat him. I mean, Abaku. Mm-hmm.
And we do have 100% confirmation now. The third Divine Tongue is Franziska von Karma. It is a 12-year-old with a whip, so she's probably going to have a dominatrix gimmick.
That won't be creepy.
But it makes me know exactly which music to use when she gets introduced.
Yeah. There you go, yeah.
I'm like, bam, it's right there for me. But yeah, no, I thought this was a good chapter, and I'm looking forward to seeing where this arc goes. I was also really curious to see where Gakuyo Hotai's been doing, because, I mean, obviously it got picked up in English Jump, but I was kind of curious to see where it is in you know, Japanese Jump, and it's in a solid spot right in the middle. And,
yeah, it's in the middle. It's doing better than Takujo no Ageha.
Yeah. Certainly. So we'll certainly be getting more of Gakuyo Hotai, which is what I'm excited about. I think this series is one that's going to get better with time. I think it just needs time to build up all of its elements first. I also really like that we're continuing to just see that cast coming in and out. You know, we saw the idol and Sasuke character and Tanto's friend. I can't remember their names, but I like seeing them.
Higashide.
Yeah.
Sasuke guy.
I like that aspect. So.
See, and he's going to be an important character, remember, because he is like an undercover agent for some reason. So.
Mm-hmm.
So now let's do Kagami Gami, I guess.
Yes. Oh, Jesus, it's 8:30 already.
Yeah, let's try and do this one pretty quickly, because honestly, not a whole lot really happens. Basically, it's Moko, right?
Let's go to page
Mako. All right, Mio or Miyoshi, whatever. Mako has invited Kyosuke and Haku into her place to stay, and they're like, oh, you know, this is a pretty clean place. Oh, can we go in there? No, don't go in there. And she's got, like, a gas mask on, which changes between panels.
Well, she's like, you can't go in there. And then they're like, well, what do you have in that room? And she's like, well, you can't wear that. You can't go in there either. And it's, like, the mask upgrades, I guess, because that room's even stinkier.
Well, it starts off like that's her room. They try and go in there. It's like, oh my god, there's so much trash. It smells so terrible. And she's like, you can't go in there. Your lungs will rot in 5 minutes without a mask. And it's like, but it's your room. What are you doing? And then she's like, this is a forbidden area where no one can enter. And she's got a new mask on.
Yeah, it's just like, for some mysterious reason, trash seems to slowly accumulate here. I have no idea why.
Freaking love Mako.
That's the one thing I'll give this series, is Mako is fucking amazing. Holy shit, by far my favorite, like, female character in a Jump series.
In a long time, at the very least. So, but they're like, oh my god, the office space is so clean, though, so she makes, like, that good professional impression. But then she's just really lazy about her actual living space. So, you know, they're like, oh my god, everything about her is just fake, basically. But then the landlord comes in, she demands Mako give her rent, and she's like, I'm sorry, you know, a lot of stuff happened, I was going to pay, but I can't. She's like, I figured you would say that. And she summons this fucking giant to start throwing her stuff out. This guy is like 10 feet tall or something. He's ridiculous. He just starts ripping the television out of the wall and stuff like that. And the landlady says, like, what the hell are you doing bringing a kid here? You trying to do something, like, really...
She's like, he's no! A child. You should be ashamed of yourself.
And Kyoji's like, I'm not a cute little boy. Shut up.
I was like, I forgot you're a thing in this. I thought you were just a vehicle for Mako to be awesome around.
So he's like, yeah, I'm Miss Miyoshi's assistant, yeah. And so basically, like, they try and say, he's like, yeah, you know, she's like, oh, really, you're such an impressive tech, you have an assistant now? Well, why don't you try and find my cat? You know, she hasn't come home in 2 days, and you've got until midnight to find her. So Mako's like, oh, fuck, we're never going to be able to do this. But Haku and Kyosuke are like, oh, we'll summon, you know, Shikigami in order to help us. And he transforms, and she's like, oh, I'll call you Shiro. Because the kanji for Haku can be read as Shiro as well, and also he has white hair. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. It's not the first time I've seen a character be called Shiro and then not liking it. So, yeah.
Anyway, guys, they find the cat. They find all the cats.
Eventually. They basically resolve it by just gathering all the strays they can find and then just, like, lining them all up and having the landlady eventually identify her cat. She's like, okay, fine, you know, I'll let you off this time and extend your rent for a little while for this boy's sake, but, you know, you should be ashamed of yourself having to rely on him and stuff. And at the end, Kyosuke uses his Shikigami to actually clean Mako's place up. To clean her face
up. clean her. They start punching her face or whatever. We're gonna clean your face up here, lady!
And also, apparently, he's a really good cook. Seemingly.
This manga has the weirdest, most awkward end to the chapter. Like, she wakes up, her entire room's cleaned, and she's like, oh, thanks, and, you know, he's making breakfast. And that would be, like, the moment you'd expect it to end, is, like, she's relieved, and she knows that she has someone, like, who's gonna accompany her, and, like, it's nice. And then maybe expect, like, a tiny panel for what happens in the next giant panel, where he's like, you know, oh, hey, I didn't touch any of your personal stuff while I was cleaning. And you kind of expect her, like, maybe to have, like, a thing, like, oh, no, I hope you didn't see any of my underwear while I was clean or something awkward like that. But she's like, no, thanks. That's really nice. And then she takes a bite, and she's like, that's delicious. Credits.
This is delicious!
What the fuck? Such a weird end to that chapter. I like Mako. I really like her. I think she's hysterical. She's funny. Like, I love her goofiness. I love her over-the-top attitude. I love how she's far and away the most eccentric and amusing part of the series. I also think it's weird that I guess there is no secret society or secret to these Shikigami that they're trying to keep up.
Here's all these Shikigami!
Yeah, because a fucking parade of minions show up with cats and an old lady's like, what are these? But she doesn't really care too much. I want to like this series more, but it's really just like, oh, hey, Mako's cool, and that's it.
Okay, let's go ahead to My Hero Academia. Still not really sure what's going on. Still not sure who a lot of these characters are. I'm sorry.
I got asked on the One Piece forum that I do, like, what my thoughts on My Hero Academia was, like, you know, what I think's happening. I was like, my explanation for what's going on. They're in a sporting event. there's a kid with half black, half white hair who has a power. I don't know what his power is, but it is important. Credits. There's a dude with fire beard. That is awesome. I have no idea otherwise.
So, basically, Todoroki's team, that Todoroki is the guy with black and white hair, by the way, they have, like, all the points, because they have the 10 million point headband and stuff. And so, Bakugo is really angry, and he tries to go after Monoma, and Monoma's team is in second place with, like, 1,000-something points. So he, like, explodes off of his cavalry horse, and they're like, "Guy, no, get back here, what are you doing?" Just explodes through the air, tries to snatch the headband. They're like, "Oh, Subaraba, use your guard." He's like, "Yeah, okay." And we're introduced to his power, which is solid air. He can solidify air into walls or footholds, and the size is determined by his lung capacity. So he just summons this barrier up in front of the team, so Bakugo can't get to there. They're like, "Yeah, how do you like that? It's an invisible wall." And Bakugo just fucking punches through and grabs with that.
"Give me that!"
He's like, "Your power is useless. Fuck you.
Suck it."
And they're like, "Oh, they've gotten two of the headbands, putting them in third place. What a late shake-up of the rankings." And they're like, "Oh, man, all right. We'll have to guard this last one with our lives. This will keep us in fourth place." And Malcolm's like, "No, fuck this. I'm not silly for some half-assed first place." And he's like hammering on the front guy's head. He's so angry. Then they charge forward again towards Monoma, just like trying to complete their revenge, basically. And they're like, "Yeah, we're going to get our points back, and then we're going to get the 10 million points as well." And so Bakugo is, like, shouting to his team members, like, "All right, soy sauce face, use your tape." He's like, "My name is Sero." And so he...
"All right, raccoon eyes, melt the pastel into the liquid. It's Mina. That wasn't even close."
And so they dash ahead, and they're like, and I don't know exactly what they do, but somehow...
Well, I think what they do is he uses the tongue as, like, a rubber band, and then they slick the floor with her liquid, whatever it is, and then he uses his explosions as, like, a jet blast to propel them along the slick surface with his, like, rubber band power for extra momentum to kind of, nice. Like, slingshot him past them.
And he snatches the rubber band along the headband along the way. And the people are kind of talking
about... It's all an assumption, though. I don't know what the fuck any of these characters' powers are, except for fucking explosion.
They have a liquid, and they have tape.
Yeah.
But they're like, "Oh, man, you know, the difference between those aiming for the top and everyone else, his overwhelming tenacity, they couldn't see or match it." And you know, I was just like, "Oh, Bakugo is absolutely merciless. What a perfectionist, blah, blah, blah." And but he's still like, "We're going to get them all. Let's get Deku's and Todoroki's." Ah! And then it's like there's 20 seconds left. Deku is trying to get the headband up to Todoroki, and he's using his All Might power. He's like, "All right, you know, I'll use this instant to, I won't hit him. I'll just slice through the air, break through his defense, and snatch the headband." And he, like, knocks the guy's hand away to prevent him from blocking. He's like, "All right, it hurt, but my hand's not broken. All Might said visualization is the key, and that's why for the past 2 weeks I've been trying to recapture that sensation from back then." And he's flipped around all of the headbands and stuff to hide their point values, but my 10 million was the last one he took, so it should be on top. So he snatches the top one, and he's like, "All right, I got it!" And then he looks down, and he's like, it's not the 10 million point one. It's a 70.1. And like, "Oh no, we're not, that's not enough for us to advance, because only the top four teams advance," and time starts counting down. We get, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, and everyone's struggling, trying to grab something, but the points don't change, even as everyone is struggling as best they can. And so Deku's like, "Oh no, we didn't do it, no, and they announce that the top four teams are Todoroki's, Bakugo's, Team Tetsu, whoever the fuck they are, and then Deku's other teammates point over their shoulders at the bird-haired guy, and he's like, "Todoroki was clearly shaken by your first attack, and I did my best to damn the 10 million, but I came up short, but I got another one. I managed to get the one on his head when he dropped his guard. Midoriya, that last-ditch effort of yours left Todoroki open." They're like, "Oh, fourth-place team is Midoriya's team, and these four teams will proceed to the final event." And Todoroki is upset that he couldn't use his power, something, I don't know. And then they're like, "Oh, God, we're upset that we were eliminated. Oh, congratulations to you." And then Todoroki, like, takes Deku into, like, this corridor, and he's like, "What did you want to talk about?" But then we cut somewhere else, and All Might is talking to a guy with flaming eyes and beard.
Firebeard. That is awesome.
He's like, it's been a while. Do you want to grab some tea? Endeavor. What is going on? I have no idea the rest of this series.
I have no idea what's going on. It's still good. Everything's still good. The art's fantastic. The emotion's definitely there. I feel like, had I been following this entire adventure, I think it'd be extremely awesome that the bird guy managed to get a bandana at the last moment and Midoriya's team advances. It's just, it's not Jump's fault. It's just, this was an awful place to start at, because it's really hard. There's so many characters in the series, and I have no idea who almost any of them are. But the art is still fucking awesome, so I'm going to keep reading regardless. It's still good. It's going to take a moment to catch up. This is thankfully the end of this event, so maybe jumping into the next one will be a little bit easier.
Starting off a little bit from scratch, basically.
Yeah.
Alright. Brief thoughts on Isekoi. God, basically try and summarize this like Kagami Kami. They are still leaving, basically. Paula confirms that she is going to leave too, because, you know, she basically came to, you know, tail Tsugumi. Haru is really upset because they are friends, and although Paula is just like, ah, I'll be fine, and her classmates are like, are you gonna be okay, Paula? I mean, don't cry. Don't be upset. She's like, I'm not gonna cry. Why are you guys... What's wrong with you? I'm fine. But then Haru's like, I'm gonna miss you, Paula! And she hugs her, and Paula starts crying. Yep.
So beautiful. That's
the joke. Yeah. So, then Raku goes and talks to Tsugumi, and she's like, it's like, hey, what's going on? And so Tsugumi says that, you know, actually, first Raku takes notice that a bunch of her fans have given her gifts and stuff like that. They have a conversation, and Tsugumi's like, no, I'll be fine, you know, but, you know, we have kind of gotten along really well, and Chijuge is definitely going to miss you, and I'm really upset that I'm not strong enough in order to let her stay here. I wish I were stronger, blah, 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 blah. Make sure that you keep in touch with her, because, you know, she's going to miss you more than anyone else here. And Raku's like, oh, and I'll make sure to keep in touch with you too. And she's like, why? I don't have a crush on you. I don't have a crush on you. Eh. Yeah, right. But at the end of it, Tsugumi's like, you know, this might be my last chance to get to say this, so I'm glad you were my mistress's boyfriend. So, yeah. It's kind of a sweet thing. It's honestly would probably be a lot more effective if not for the whole Tsugumi has a crush on Raku, but she's not admitting a thing. Because, honestly, this series could use more females who do not have crushes on Raku, basically. Tsuyuge goes to see Claude, and she says, like, look, I've got these signatures from all these Beehive members who have agreed to stay here with me in Japan. Then, you know, that should be safe, right? And then Tsugumi can stay too, and Paula can stay too, and stuff like that. And Claude says, no, that is not enough people. You know, it's not 10... not even 50, not even 100 would be enough in order to protect you. And in fact, you're just going to endanger them too, because it would be like, you know, cutting off a whole bunch of people and stuff who would be useful to me otherwise. So he's like, no, you can't stay. So Chijuge is still very angry. She's like, oh, Dad, let me stay. I love my life here. There are people I won't want to leave behind. I actually like that, you know, she says, wouldn't you be happy living with you know, your mom? She's like, yes, I would. Still going to miss people, though.
Yeah.
Not when it's, oh, it'll be the worst thing. I was like, no, I just really want to. Yeah.
I'd love to stay with mom, but I have a lot of friends here too, so.
Yeah. And so her dad jokes, like, oh, could it be you've come to like Raku and don't want to be part of him? And she, like, and as he's saying, just kidding, she trips and hits and falls over. And she's like, oh, no, 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 no! We were just pretending! No! Kristen don't like him! No! No! And she's like, and so her father is like, oh, fuck. I'm so sorry.
Her father's like, holy shit, in one chapter I figured out you liked him. How long's it been going on? How long has that kid not figured it out?
Oh, goddamn, that kid's an idiot. Then the chapter ends with Shu and Raku kind of walking into this room together. They are, like, doing some sort of class duty. And Raku's like, yeah, I'm kind of sad. But, you know, we don't have to go on pretending to, you know, be dating and stuff. And, you know, now I can actually find out what it's like to actually date someone and then, you know, fall in love and so on and so forth. So she was like, so who do you like better between Onodera and Kirisaki?
Hey, Nick, do you think he's going to answer it?
No, because then the series will have to end.
I love it when, a harem series has that question brought up. Like, which girl do you like best? Because it's always used as, like, the cliffhanger, like, who's he gonna say? And you're like, I know what's gonna happen next chapter. He's not gonna fucking answer it. or he'll give a shitty answer, or something will come to interrupt this conversation, we won't get an answer, or he's like, I love everyone equally, or I don't know, we're just not going to get an answer.
Or he's going to be like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Of course I like Onodera. That's the girl I have a crush on, right?
Oh, man.
So, I mean, it's like, it honestly is not as good as the last couple of chapters have been, but it's nice to know, it's like, hey, when the series gets real, it can be good.
Yeah. Let's see where they actually go with this.
Right. One Piece. Chapter 776. Hero of the Colosseum. So, first up, we get a little bit aftermath of Franky beating Senor Pink, setting all the Tanta in the factory free. And he's like, all right, this place has tortured you, Tantas, long enough, so tear this despicable factory down to the ground. And everyone's like, yeah! And Franky just kind of like stands behind them. He's just like, the rest is in your hands, Luffy. Thud! Oh no, Franky's dead! No, he's not.
Actually, Nick, he goes clank.
Because he's metal. Although his back isn't metal, so he should.
But his shoulder pads are giant, okay, so I think those hit the ground first.
Yeah. Then we cut to the plateau where Diamante is still squaring off with Kairos. It's a small thing, but I have to say, I like how when he announces his attack, like half moon, glaive, the half moon, the word bubble is divided into half moons. I like that.
That was like Nick's highlight of this chapter.
I like it!
It is, it's cool.
So, it's like, oh no, his ultimate attack is coming! Oh, and he like smashes his sword down this tremendous wave blast through the ground, knocks Kairos away, and Robin has to dodge it with Rebecca. And Diamante says, ah, what's wrong, Kairos? You were so spunky and full of rage just a minute ago. Spunky? Really? Come on, man.
Oh, his laugh isn't wacky enough. That's not that good. I need something like
or dia.
Yeah, something like that.
So Diamante is like, oh, did you really think I was just some genius matador rippling in the wind? Don't just assume you'll always be the greatest gladiator in the Colosseum's history. I have sheer undeniable talent. I'm the current hero of the Colosseum, the great Diamante! Pretty good brag.
Yeah. I'll note that I love the dialogue in this chapter.
Kairos tries to attack Diamante, but he makes his own body ripple around the blade, which I don't think we've actually seen him do before. So let's see. Kairos is getting really tired. He like gets down on his knee because he's so tired. And Diamante's like, "Ah, I don't blame you. You've been running around the kingdom all day, and then forced to protect your daughter as you fight on a rippling surface and on one leg. A normal man would have been immobilized ages ago. Well, you don't need to patronize me for my single leg. I would not charge in a battle if I was going to use that as an excuse. I gave that leg for the sake of my savior. It is a point of pride." That's cool.
Yeah.
And then Diamante summons fucking firecrackers, which unravel, and he has them shoot up confetti, which is actually raveled up fucking maces and giant spiked metal balls. This is freaking weird.
It's fucking awesome. I love his like explanation. He's like, go on, guess what the confetti is? Rip release! Gaze upon this beautiful sight! It's like falling stardust! And fucking maces rain down from heaven.
They're like, oh my god, we're so screwed. And Dumont is like, that panic shows you're paying attention. Yes, my stardust can massacre an entire regiment. It will be nearly impossible to survive. It's a good thing this is a field of sunflowers. I'm sorry to have to pick you. Struggle and panic. Adios, suckers. Death and hambre. And freaking Robin, well, Diamante unravels a giant. I think he actually, like, does something with, I'm not sure what he does it with, but he, like, takes out something and makes it into the shape of an umbrella. But it makes a giant ka-thunk sound, so it's like a metal shield umbrella.
I like to think he just keeps a metal umbrella with him around at all times.
So Robin uses her ability to summon Mirefleur's flower umbrella. Okay, but yeah.
Well, she cuts off a whole bunch of sunflowers, then uses her hands to basically turn it into like a giant bouquet umbrella.
Right. I don't know exactly how did they establish the flowers are like special?
This is Green Bit, right? So isn't this the flowers that Tantata have been making? I might be missing mistaken where Goomba was.
I'm just trying to think, like, what's special about the sunflowers? But they repel the Stardust spiky mace things anyway. Meanwhile, Kairos is not under the flower umbrella. He's just using his sword to swat them away, like a badass.
I fucking love Diamante's line. He's knocking the spike balls aside! Are you telling me he can walk through rain without getting wet?!
That's basically what he's doing. So Diamante's like, alright, fuck it. Takes out his gun, shoots Kairos in his one leg. He falls over. Oh my god, what a douche. Shooting him in his one leg. Oh, look out below, Kairos! And fucking Stardust starts falling into him. Oh, what a klutz! Who falls at such a crucial moment? Took his thing out, and then said he just fell over like a klutz. Oh god.
This is where he needs the wacky laugh. Like, what a klutz!
So Rebecca starts to get really pissed off. She tries to lash out, and she's like, oh, you'll pay for this! But Ron says, no, the projectiles are still falling. She's like, no, father! You won't get away with this, Diamante, you cheap coward! And Diamante says, that's right, Rebecca! Make me pay! Come and fight! Come and finish you off just like your mother! Oh, god, I hate this guy.
He's got such a creepy face when he says that, too.
So Rebecca's like, oh, let me go. I've got to get him. And then she reacts in shock as Kairos stands up and he says, this is my fight, Rebecca. Put down your sword. For 10 long years, you upheld your mother's wish. And Rebecca recalls when the toy soldiers started training her, she said, mother said I shouldn't hurt others. And the toy soldiers said, I'm only teaching you how to avoid being hurt. She's won every battle by disqualification without even harming a single opponent herself. The undefeated woman. So, that was why she got her opponents pissed off, was she wouldn't even fight. She would just get them all to fall out of the ring. And so Kairos says, you fought in the Colosseum, and yet you did not harm others. Your hands are still beautiful and pristine. The soul of your mother, Scarlet, still resides in those hands. There is no need for you to stain them now with the blood of this miscreant. I will not allow you to swing that sword. She drops her sword, and he charges at Diamante. He's like, oh, what the fuck? How are you doing this? Is your body made of solid steel? You're insane! He's stolid stupidity! So Kairos says, oh, my pain has proved my humanity. You would not understand that. You would not understand the despair of being forgotten by your loved ones, the pain of not being able to feel anything that you touched compared to the rain of tragedy you have inflicted upon Dressrosa. This does not even count as pain. If I am solid anything, then I am this country's solid rage here to vanquish you. So
that's such a badass line, though.
Oh, it's such a badass speech. So Diamante freaks out and he's thinking to himself, where is this power coming from? The glory of your prime was 2 decades ago. Don't overlook the strength of my sword skill. He just draws his sword and they prepare to clash. Oh, still not down yet, you monster. Looks like my steel reign is over too. If you really have a death wish, I can make it nice and quick, like I did with Scarlet. Hope your wounded leg is strong enough for you to dodge this. And Kairos says, I will dodge nothing. I'm taking our peace back. Oh, if you're not going to dodge, then you're nothing more than a simple-minded fool. And he said, half moon. But Kairos says, trueno bastardo. Which sounds really, really obscene, but I think it means something very different.
Yeah, I don't know what the language is to translate it, but
Their swords clash. Kairos' sword cuts Diamante's sword in half. He slashes Diamante across the shoulder, and Diamante falls as it looks like the battle is over. Holy fuck!
That is a satisfying little battle there. With a really creative use of Diamante's powers. And
You were really shitting on Diamante at first, too.
Which is weird. Like, looking back, I don't know why I did. That's what Oda does. He takes weird-looking powers and makes them awesome. I don't know why I should have been so shitty when that's, like, the thing I love most about the series, but
I think it was because, like, the only two demonstrations you had gotten were he made his sword curl a little bit, and he was like, oh, this cape I'm wearing is actually, like, solid steel. I just made it flutter with my power.
Well, that is poor form on past Christopher. I'm very ashamed of you. You should have had more faith in Oda. I love what we got out of Kairos of this. And look, I've been hearing that this chapter is very divisive amongst people, and I can understand why it is for some. I think the issue with it is a lot of people are upset that
Rebecca didn't fight.
Rebecca didn't fight. And it's not that Rebecca doesn't fight, because it actually makes a lot of sense in the context of what we've known about Rebecca, that she wasn't ever a warrior. She was someone who was forced to fight in the Colosseum, and she always did it in ways where she dodged her opponent and won through basically them defeating themselves. So Kryos should have been the one to have this fight. You know, he is the warrior. He is the one getting revenge for his family. It's not an issue for him to be saying, you know, Rebecca, you're not a warrior. Put that sword down. Your hands are still innocent. Because that is also a big aspect of Kryos' character, was that concept of innocence and good. You know, he didn't think himself to be a good person, a person worthy to have a family. So it makes sense for him to see Rebecca that way. The issue in all of this, though, that makes this such a kind of a little bit uncomfortable point is that no women have had any real impact in this arc at all.
Except to be saved, basically.
Yeah, I mean, Princess Mansheri was just a plot point to bring up at one point. There are no female leads in Doflamingo's family. Nami isn't even in this arc. And Robin, in this point, showed up, and it looks like this might have been...
Well, Robin got saved by Bartolomeo.
Yeah, but that's not... I mean,
I'm saying it's like she was saved, basically. She's been protected, essentially. And even Baby Five looked like she was going to get a fight. Nope.
Yeah, it's just the fact that it's like... You want to have... If Robin was fighting Treble, I think it's like the sneeze guy. If like that happened, you'd completely be fine. It's just this awkward point where no females have had a large role in this. And this one particular element of Kryos saying, no, my child, don't continue this fight, it's for me to finish, and he's saying it to a daughter, really kind of makes it like an uncomfortable, like, you know, put your sword down, get to the kitchen, like that kind of mentality. In a vacuum, I don't think that's what they're trying to do, but when you look at the arc as a whole, it's tough not to kind of see that as an unintentional point of this, and that does suck. I still like this chapter because I like what we got out of Kryos. I understand he's not a main character, but he's a character who has been built up through this arc, and it is still satisfying to see him get his conclusion and his victory against Diamante. I mean, we've seen this before, like with Wiper back in Skypiea. You know, we've had those big characters who have existed in those arcs who don't join the Straw Hats or anything like that, but they still have a big purpose to be told. It's just, I wish, and I'm desperately hoping that Rebecca or Robin still has something to do in this arc that's going to be more substantial than just, thank God you've saved everybody, I will, I guess, become a princess, or, you know, whatever it may be.
We'll see.
No.
All right. Toriko.
I have Seven Deadly Sins I can go through real quick. Sorry, Nick.
Yeah.
Sorry. Seven Deadly Sins, Chapter 114, The Lost Heroes, with a cover page of blinding bright orange mixed with bright green, which, oh god, it's awful. Why? And we start the chapter off with our first character popularity poll. And, you know, it starts with Hawk, and he's talking about how, like, I'm, of course, going to be the most popular character. And he goes over the top 10. Elizabeth's in 10th place, which I found really amusing. Like, oh wow, nobody really cares about her. Also, the dog was in 6th place. That is the dog who eats people to teleport them places, who's shown up twice, I think. Melodius was in 5th place. 4th place was Hendrickson. Gowther somehow got 3rd place. And I was like, oh, okay, that must mean Bond's 1st place. But he actually got 2nd, and King was in 1st. Which was extremely strange to me. I didn't expect him to be that popular of a character, since he isn't hit that, like, stereotypically cool character idea. Hawk was in 11th, but I guess there was also a postcard vote, in which case the vote, like, tally is completely different, where Melodius would be first, and then Bond second. It was weird the way they structured it. But anyway, to the chapter itself, I'm just going to really quickly go through it. Gowther frees Guya from his mind control, and instead of being horrified that she did it, or he did it, rather, Guya's like, well, at least you gave me memories of my father, so I guess that's kind of cool. And then it turns out Gowther's a doll. So Merlin turns him into a doll and then hands him to Slater to take care of. And they're like, all right, well, we have to go on a mission. Slater, you come with us. which was weird because I thought they gave Galther to him because he wasn't coming along. Otherwise, why wouldn't you just take Galther along? Whatever, he's coming along. And then Elizabeth's like, but I'm your ally too. You know, don't you feel that way? Or is it because I just slow you down? And Melodius's like, yep, you nailed it. You're a fucking big waste of space. So everyone punches him for being an asshole. And that's basically it. That's the chapter. They're going over to Camelot because they can see shit's going on there. Credits.
Alright. Let's see if we can get through Torikyo quickly. Basically, people are sensing this, like, sense of impending doom and anxiety all around the world. People are like, oh, we've got to eat something because this could be our last chance to eat it. And people are like overwhelmed by the question of, if this were your last chance to eat something, what would you eat, basically? And all back on the mountain, all the apes are fleeing away after the Monkey King Bambino's true form has been revealed. And like, and Zebra is like, he's been stripped. I don't know if it was clothing or skin or what, but however you figure it, that's the Monkey King's true form. And at that moment, the Monkey King, like, puts a hand on his chest where Torikyo used his infinite spiked punch. And Torikyo and just, like, stops vibrating, basically. And Torikyo's like, oh my god, he just made my infinite spiked punch stop! And then the Bambina's eyes flare, and all of Torikyo's group, their, like, demon forms take over their arms, and which drags them to the ground. As Monkey King swipes his tail and sends out this shockwave that cuts off the top of all the ring posts, launches out into space, and destroys satellites. And presumably does something catastrophic, basically. And Torikyo's like, oh my god! We could have died, basically! And Kaka says some stuff.
Why was he a surfer?
I don't know. Kaka says, let me explain the rules and tell you something. When you were arm wrestling with the Monkey King, you remember how the face of your gourmet cell almost appeared? You must avoid that at all costs. The cells in your left arm will fall out of step and throw off the harmony of your entire body. In other words... She doesn't say anything. Why do people in manga do this? Don't finish your fucking sentences!
They just get distracted. They're like, holy shit, that monkey's not wearing any pants!
So Torikyo basically realizes that if their, you know, demons had service, they would have all been cut down and died. Duh. So Zebra says, alright, listen guys, if you're going to die today, what's the last thing you'd want to eat? They're like, pear! Alright, we'll get it if we beat that monkey. Yeah, alright, go beat that monkey. And then narration says, Kaka leisurely strode by Terry, Kiss, and Quinn. Even though they're all on high alert, the three of them were in charge of protecting Komatsu and would have let it flee through, but they weren't even aware of Kaka's banks.
But they fucked this one up real good.
So Kaka is just like, I have to do something. She goes into the train and looks all ominous and stuff, reaches out for Komatsu, who is still comatose, but then Komatsu sits up, and Kaka's like, what the fuck? Then we get outside, and Torikyo and company doing this really weird synchronized attack. Like, it looks like they're fucking line dancing or something, the way that they're running forward together. Whatever, they're like, we're gonna beat you, baby, and that's the end of the chapter.
I really wish it ended with the Komatsu to just suddenly waking up scene.
Well, but
it
would be a way better ending.
It's like, wow, what the fuck's happening here? As opposed to like, let's all use our cells together or something. But I like this chapter much more than I have in many recent weeks of Torikyo. I like the idea that at the start of this, they're just like, everyone in the world is suddenly feeling the urge to eat the most delicious thing they can find because they feel it might be the last thing that in Earth they'll ever eat. And the reason that that is happening is because the Monkey King is fully awakened. Like, it builds this dude up as a fucking monster. I mean, the entire world is reacting to what this dude can do now that he's, like, completely unleashed. I think that's a cool kind of build up. And, you know, I like the idea that their arms all came out and that's what saves them. It's fine. But I really like the effective ending, too, of like, oh, shit, Komatsu's awake? What the fuck's going on there? Mm-hmm. So, cool pieces to it.
Right. Well, that's going to do it for the recap. So, we're going to wind down here. Thank you for joining us for this edition of Weekly Manga Recap. Join us next week for a jam-packed edition.
Oh, Jesus.
Where we're going to be talking about not just our recommendation, M0, but 11 different series besides. That's going to be on twitch.tv/RiloT, probably Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, though we may need to change the time, so be sure to follow us on Twitter. He is at RiloT, and I'm at YRilloTime, and we'll tweet you when we're starting the recording. Also, be sure to send us your criticism, questions, and suggestions for future manga for us to read in the comments section or email them to us. weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com is the address. Special thanks go out to Steve Mann, our title card artist. You can check out his work at neuroticfanboy.deviantart.com, odrawboobs.tumblr.com, and support him on patreon.com/stevemann. Also, special thanks to the infamous Planet, who puts up with all of our numerous references to obscure bullshit when he does those visual editions of our show.
Yes.
That's going to do it. So,
Also, a quick shout-out to Nochi-san for giving us a 5-star review on iTunes. Greatly appreciate it. Thank you,
Please subscribe and rate so that we can beat those damn woodworking assholes. And, of course, check out all of our previous episodes on weeklymangarecap.podbean.com.
And to our apparently enormous listenership in the United Arab Emirates, I want to hear from you. I know many of you may not... Well, no, if you're listening to this podcast, you must have some, hang on the English language, so I want to hear from you. How the fuck did you find us?
Why do you listen to us so much?
Why are you more why are we more popular in fucking the United Arab Emirates than we are in America?
That's amazing.
I want to know.
I want to know. Or that's Scully, right? That wasn't a Scully voice. Bye!
What? Scully?
Yeah, I want to know, right? X-Files.
Isn't I Want to Believe?
Oh, you're right. I never watched X-Files. Who gives a shit?
Why'd you quote it?
Because it occurred to me.